This is Live Cope, LLC. We're a self-help podcast out of Colorado Springs, Colorado. Welcome back to another episode of Women Who Inspire. Today we're coming from Studio 916. I am Nancy Perez, your host. And today I'm so excited that we get to have this awesome conversation with another incredible woman, Lauren Penn, Doctor of Chiropractic. Welcome. How are ya?
I'm well, thank you.
So I met this incredible woman just last week, and I was like, oh my God, she is like just a ball of energy. She did a keynote speech at a fundraiser I went to, and I got to learn a little bit about you, but not enough. I just was like, I want to know more. And this morning, you know, as you're telling me, I'm like, this is great. I need more of this. And it's important to have, for me, you know, I'm a Mexican woman, right? And you are an African-American woman, Black woman. I don't know what you prefer in America. And I like having different perspectives because I can't speak for you. But as someone who is constantly trying to speak for women, it is important to know, like, what are you going through? What has led you to your passions and what is your driving force? So for those listening at home, can you tell us a little bit about you, your story, where you're from?
Okay. I was born in San Jose, California. I am the youngest of five children. My parents grew up in San Francisco. As a child, was very inquisitive, and so my whole life has just been based upon being inquisitive, which led me to being a chiropractor. I was sharing with someone the other day that I was that kid who, when we lived in San Jose, our front room was like facing the sun, and the flies would go and die there. You know, the flies would go and pay their homage there, and I was just like, I wonder what it'd be like if I put a pin through them. And then, you know, start looking and dissecting. And I didn't know that was science then, but I knew that I loved doing that to, like, bugs. And I loved rocks and dirt. And my curiosity about science had just increased over time. I never knew that. I never thought I would be a doctor because as time went on and I joined the military, I became a surgical technologist. And just working with so many physicians, I was like, this isn't the kind of doctor that I really want to be.
Yeah.
I didn't want to be on a pager. I didn't want all my time being consumed with that type of work.
Yeah, I hear that.
Putting people on drugs, you know, being on call, being on a pager, and just having that level of responsibility. But also, it wasn't part of my ideology on how I think that people get well. So, as being an OR tech, I people had told me, like, from the time that I was 20 until the time that I got into chiropractic school at 40 years old, you're going to be a doctor. And I was like, nah. I loved science. I was a chemistry major for a while. So I took, you know, chemistry. I loved geology. I started taking these science classes. And I had just learned that in your life, if you're paying attention to it, shows you what your purpose is. So when I was the little girl, you know, mercenarying these, you know, the mercenary to the flies, I never thought it would lead me to being in a cadaver lab dissecting human bodies to learn about how to be a chiropractor. But through that whole journey, not just that, even when I was in school, Mr. Davis, I think his name was my sixth grade teacher, and science was so fascinating. His classroom was full of everything, plants and potatoes, and we learned about electricity, and we learned about animals. It was just so fascinating to me. I was like, I was hooked. I was just like, oh my goodness.
And that was sixth grade?
That was in the sixth grade.
So it started, your calling was there.
Yeah, you're, that's what I mean. Your calling starts as soon as your awareness starts. So like being a mercenary to the flies, I wasn't aware. I was just like curious, like what would happen, you know, if I do this, are they going to live? And you put the pin through them and they kind of still flutter and their wings are still, and then you take the wing off. And you know, so that I didn't have any awareness then, but when I got in the sixth grade and Mr. Davis, I think his name was Mr. Davis, was my science teacher. He just opened up my whole world about everything, you know, it, because when you learn about science, you learn how to be creative. And when you learn how to be creative, you're, that's your initiation to being an inventor or an entrepreneur, right?
Yes.
Because you're like, this was nothing and now it's something. This was very little. And now, you know, we did this potato experiment where the potato was in the water. And as the potato began to grow, we put these leads in it and it generated energy. And we attached a battery to it, but it would turn the light on.
Wow. At sixth grade, you were doing that? That's amazing. He was a really good teacher.
Mr. Davis, he was my guy. I was like, yes. But when I got to high school, I still love science. I loved learning. I loved reading. I would just go to the library and read. As a kid, I had dyslexia. I still have it. And I see it in different ways now as an adult and an independent person. But when I was in school, I was in the lowest reading group. And I remember just reading the dictionary. My brother, being 9 years older than me, always challenged me on my intellect. And so I just began reading the dictionary so I could learn how to read and know and make my vocabulary very vast. And then when I got into high school, I took classes. Sometimes in high school here in the United States, you can take a study hall.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And you could, you know, you take 8 classes and one of your 8 classes could be a study hall. But until I was in the 11th grade, I took classes every year. So when I was in the 11th grade, I could have graduated early.
Oh, wow.
When I was a sophomore in high school, biology was the required science. And my elective was chemistry.
So you knew all along that science and just being able to figure things out, right?
Yeah.
Like that, I think that's more, maybe it wasn't science, maybe, but even in everything that you do, I think that you're always trying to find a solution.
Yes.
And you're always working for that purpose, right?
Absolutely.
Of finding that solution. So I think it can be translated to a lot of different things. That's really exciting to know that, like, so early on, you can tie it back, right? And right. I think that's the beautiful thing about discovering your true purpose is that you're able to go back and see these pivotal moments in time where someone helped you or someone encouraged you or someone gave you that that space to just be the best version that you could be, whether that was a great science student or that was a great employee or that was a great sister. Whatever that role you were playing at the time, is there a time other than your sixth grade, you know, science teacher that you remember someone giving you that, something like that, that you needed that propelled you to where you are today?
Every step of the way.
Yeah.
In retrospect, not in live, you know, not like in 1985, it was 1985 and I remember that person did that for me. But in retrospect, I'm a veteran. And when I was in the military, what I learned now about the military that I didn't know then was the military focuses, or they really recruit people who want a way out of their life. If they're in an urban area or if they're in a rural area.
Okay.
And so when I went into the military, I grew up in suburbia. I grew up 2-parent home, nice school district. Education was never a problem. I had access to many things. When I was in the 12th grade, my dad told me he couldn't pay for my school. I'm the youngest of 5 kids. So many of my siblings had the opportunity to go, and some of them did go. And I knew from an early age, because I was inquisitive, I'm the kind of person who can't live without education. Mm. Like, my life without education would have been difficult if I, in those careers that I may have chosen, that didn't involve a degree.
Really?
Yeah. Because I was an OR tech, and I was already getting in so much trouble, I mean, along the way. And it was because I thought differently. And all my managers had said, you know, you're too smart for this job. And I was like, yes, but I have a child, so I had to feed him and clothe him and house him. So I don't care how smart I am, I got to pay a
bill.
But when I was in the military, I was in a platoon and nobody wanted me there. And they had this detachment that they were going to form. And so it was a way to get rid of me.
Wow.
And so I got assigned to this detachment. And Sergeant Del Larry, he was like my army dad. That's what I call him. He was my army dad. I had an army dad and I had an army brother. And Del, when I met him, he said, you know, Private Penn, they tell me you got an attitude. And I said, well, don't we all?
Yeah.
I have attitude. You have attitude. You have attitude. We all have attitude. You get attitude. You get attitude. You get attitude. We all get attitude, right? Over Winfrey would say something like that. And he said to me, after talking a few more minutes, he said, I know what your problem is. And I said, like I have a problem? He said, you're intelligent. And I said, oh, that's a problem? What I know now that I did not know then is because I was intelligent. I was the kind of person, when I got to that platoon, my platoon leader was an alcoholic.
Oh.
And I was like, I can't follow him. This guy's an alcoholic.
Yeah.
Like, he's going to put me in danger.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, well, you know, this sergeant has been in the military for, I don't care how long he's been in the military, he's an alcoholic. He can't make sound decisions. Those are the things that got me in trouble.
Wow.
So without education and being a person, because education influences some people.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't influence everybody.
Right.
But it influences enough people for you to persuade them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And without that passport of persuasion, you can lend yourself to being in trouble.
Ugh.
Or alienated.
Yeah.
Or singled out or different. I recently read a book called David and Goliath by Malcolm Gladwell. And it changed my life.
Yeah, how so?
Because when you grow up and you're dyslexic and you don't look like it, because they tie it to maybe reading problems or
mm-hmm.
math problems and inverting your words or inverting your numbers or doing things like that are some signs of dyslexia. I didn't have that. But there's a social aspect of it.
Oh, gotcha.
And in this book, he kind of explains the social aspect of it. And he talks about how dyslexic people learn. And he says, you know, dyslexic people learn to read from the right side of their brain, which is not the logical side. So what that lends them to do is making systems for them to cope in their tasks.
Wow.
And I was like, this guy wrote a book about me? And I didn't.
I feel like I didn't read this book.
No, I was like, I never met this guy. I got to meet this guy. I got to meet this author. So I hope if he's listening, Dr. Lauren Penn, I'm in Colorado Springs and I want to meet you.
But let's make it happen.
What it did for me, it made me understand all the times where people said, you are black and white. You have to learn the gray areas. You have to learn to compromise. And it wasn't that I didn't want to learn how to do it. My mind just doesn't think like that.
Wow.
It made me an expert at what I did. It made me an expert at being an OR tech because I put a lot of systems in place.
Yeah.
And I was like, I worked with many surgeons. I worked with world renowned surgeons. And I worked in total joints and trauma surgeries. I worked in sports, orthopedics.
Okay.
And I was just very regimented. I did everything the same way every time.
Which, for something like that, it's kind of needed. I mean, if you're operating on me or if you're, I want you to have a system that you know works, that has a track record.
And along the way, at some point in time in my career, I got pretty decent at knowing how to work off the cuff. So, like, sometimes people would take my instruments. I'd come in for the day, I'd set up for the day, and they would take my instruments. And I'm like, you know, I needed those instruments. Well, they're like, well, you don't need that until X time, but in my precision of who I am, I could look at the surgical board and I can know the breakdown of the board. I can know when instruments would turn over or when they wouldn't turn over, when a surgeon would be late or when they wouldn't, because it's just patterns. So I was learning the patterns of the OR.
So what would that do to you, having someone tell you, like, I'm going to take this, you'll be fine? Like, obviously being dyslexic is one thing, but that's also, like, infuriating as a person. Like, dyslexic or not, like, yo, respect my stuff. But how did that make you feel?
That made me feel very infuriated. I was like, because I came in early to make sure I had everything that I needed for my whole day. And over time, what I learned how to do was, because everything was regimented for me, I was like, okay, these are the instruments I need. Mm-hmm. I would in turn just go to central processing, sterile processing, and I said, can you build me a set? This is what I need. Do we have these extra instruments? I'll take them. And I learned how to work around those systems. So for the people who were the catalyst in my life, and so we think oftentimes that a catalyst is a person who's like, hey, Nancy, you can do it, girl, go, I'm for you, and they're infusing you with positivity, which is a catalyst.
Yes, but also.
But then there's the, you're making me kind of really angry here because you are doing things that are inhibiting me from being successful. Yeah. Every path that I'm taking to be successful in this, you're inhibiting.
Yes.
And that becomes a catalyst too.
Ooh, that right there, that can be applied to life, right? Like, you're trying to move along, but the system that is set in place, like the one that we live under, right? And people are like, oh, you're just focused on race and you're just angry all the time. I'm like, but that's because you don't have to navigate the system that I have to navigate and the things that I have to go through. And I think that there's such a lack of disconnect with the people that don't actually have to live. You know?
Oh, yes.
But a catalyst on its own, sometimes that is the driving force behind you saying, you know what? I'm going to change this, or I'm going to do something about this. And there you go.
And so, truth be told, I'll say Steve Harvey says, if you've ever been fired from every job that you've ever had, then that should probably give you a good indication you're supposed to be your own boss. And so when my son was younger, he had asthma. I missed a lot of work. And so initially, it was because I missed a lot of work, I kept getting released from jobs.
Gotcha.
But as time grew on, the reasons changed. And part of it was because people would say I was inflexible. And I wasn't trying to be inflexible. I was working within the power of my understanding. And so when I read this book by Malcolm Gladwell, I was like, oh my God, this is my whole entire life.
Yeah.
Right here. And I said, now I understand why people didn't like getting along with me. Because I was so regimented, I needed that to be successful.
Yeah.
And as far as, like, people go to work for different reasons. I mean, obviously, they go to work to make a paycheck.
Right.
But sometimes people go to work because they want to build a community. That wasn't my thing. People go to work to build friendships, to build a tribe. That wasn't my thing. I was always on a mission. I was always in school. I was in school. I started school when I was 5 years old because I went to kindergarten and then all the regular school. And when I met Dale Larry, because you asked me earlier, Dale said to me, you need to be in school. That was already my objective because I went into the military because I'm the type of girl who needs education.
Right.
Because I'm an African-American girl and I'm an outspoken girl. And when you do all of the DISC test or you do all the personality test, mine wash out to always be evenly distributed.
Okay.
So DISC test has four categories you could fall in. I'm quarter, quarter, quarter.
All the way around.
All the way around. That lends you to almost like not picking a side.
Gotcha.
And then I'm 50% extrovert and I'm 50% introvert. So sometimes people wouldn't get it because people would say, oh, you know, she's such an extrovert. But then sometimes I'd have to go inward and, mm-hmm. and people never understood that. You know? Yeah. So I was already a conundrum to many people.
Yeah.
You know, I was African-American woman. I was very intelligent, just natural intelligent. I later on learned that I was a healer, but I didn't know what that looked like. So people would say things like, oh, you know, you influence, you're an influencer. And they weren't using those terminologies back then.
But obviously.
And some days I come to work happy. It was probably when I was done with the semester and I passed all my classes. And then some days I'd come to work and, you know, I wasn't as happy. And, mm-hmm. and it was probably when Malik was sick and having an asthma attack and I was probably failing the class. You know, life happens.
Yeah.
And when people don't tell you you're an influencer, they expect you to still be one.
Right. Yes.
And they would say things like, you really, when you're really happy, you bring everybody up. You know, it's like, come mm-hmm. on. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But when you're down, oh my God, the reversed effect, you bring everybody down.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I was young in my 20s, and I thought how foolishness. To me, it seemed foolish because I'm around surgeons, anesthesiologists, doctors, PAs, nurses. I'm a surgical technologist, not certified. And I thought, how could you highly educated people let one person like myself influence you?
But that's because you were not seeing the power of your person. And that's because you were not realizing like that effect you have in people. And I think that is like, that is so key in life to like, once you can see it for yourself, whoo boy, does life change, because then you realize that with every act, it can be a revolution in itself, right? Because you never know who's paying attention, who's listening. This podcast, like I come on here and I share, and you know, for those of you that are listening, I hope that you get something out of it. I hope that the woman that I bring on, you know, inspires something within you. But at the end of the day, many of the lessons can be applied regardless of me being a Mexican woman and you being an African-American woman, is you still have to face things in life and decide, right? Like, do I want to see my worth? Or do I want to keep believing the buzz, the media, what society says I am because of what I look like, what my skin tone is, if I have an accent or lack of my hair, you know, all of these things. But I think that is beautiful when you can be like, look around you and see these people that we view successful or not more important, but on a pedestal almost, like, you've achieved all of this. How could you, poor little me over here? But I think when you celebrate,
that's why purpose is powerful, right?
Yes.
That's
yes.
why purpose is so powerful, because even in that, I went to school to be a chiropractor, but I'm a healer.
Mm.
When people come into my office and they say, this is my problem or that's my problem. I had a guy come in a couple of weeks ago. He said, I have headaches every day. He said, I pretty much have a perpetual headache.
Mm.
And I said, okay. And I began working on him. And over the last couple of times, I said, you know, hey, how's your headache? He said, I don't have it all day.
Progress.
Right? Progress. Where he's been, he's had this since he said he was a kid.
Oh, my gosh.
He's in his 30s. You know, when you begin to understand what your purpose looks like, it's everything around you.
Mm-hmm.
It's dissecting flies, it's meeting Mr. Davis, it's having an encourager like Dale Larry, who says, you know, you're intelligent, you need to be in school, who incentivized me by giving me an Edgar Allan Poe book, who's one of my favorite authors, and
awesome.
Charles Dickinson, you know, he's still my guy, I guess. but also coming into that, meaning, now you know that you influence people around
mm-hmm.
you. So people are going to be looking at you. It took me 10 years to digest those comments that
really?
People make. It took me 10 years.
Wow.
It took me 10 years to say, if more than 10 people are saying this, I should probably look at this.
Wow. Well, for those of you listening at home, don't let it be a decade. Don't let it be 10 years.
Okay.
Like, start looking in your life right now, because we all have purpose. And I think, like, there's people that are at home that are depressed, or they have anxiety, or they have just things going on in their life, and they're telling themselves this story of, I'm unworthy, I don't have a purpose, like, I'm useless. And it is, those of you, if you're telling yourself that story, like, stop, and instead focus that energy in finding what that purpose is, what makes you happy to just do it even if you didn't get paid for it, like, what just drives you to want to get up in the morning, right? And sometimes it is going to a school and getting, you know, a doctorate degree. And sometimes it's starting a podcast. Sometimes it's a volunteer project in your community. Sometimes it's just going outside, smelling the flowers and smiling that you're alive and that, you know, you get to wake up, because there's people dying right now on a hospital bed, not having the opportunity that you and I have to, you know, breathe and be alive. So even that in itself is purpose, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. My mom asked me for years, my family calls me Nikki. She said, Nikki, I just don't know what my calling is in life. And I believe this. I believe your calling is what you do every day. And you'll see a pattern in what you do every day. So not only when I was a little girl, but when I was even a little bit older, but I was still a little girl, I would experiment with everything. My mom made us learn how to cook. So out of five kids, we all knew how to cook. And I would be the person who'd be experimenting in the kitchen with the different recipes. And I remember her saying to me one day, do you always have to experiment? And I thought, yeah, I do. And science, no, mm-hmm. There's kitchen science. They have now, you can go to school to learn kitchen science.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know? But it's everything that you're doing. And it all looks like it's different. Like, of course, I talk about the science part, but I loved fashion too. Mm-hmm. And I was like, mix and matching things, and I was wearing things, and people were like, wow, that's really weird. You're a weirdo. And I was like, yeah, I am. But, you know, I was rocking my own style. And,
yeah.
And now that I have my own practice, and I learned that I'm an influencer, I'm like, I have to look a certain way, but it has to have my signature on it.
And it has to be natural to you,
and it has
right?
to be natural to you.
Yeah, and I love it, because that's the point. Like, so many people nowadays, and I think with social media, we have a copycat syndrome, if you want to call it that. I'm coining that term. If you guys are using it at home, give me credit. But this copycat syndrome is, you see it among men, women, and everybody in between. Like, people are often just looking onto others and then just sort of copying, and just whether it's fashion, whether it's like the way people live, how they recreate. And sometimes it's positive things to copy, right? But sometimes you're like, I feel very dumbfounded when I'm like, well, what about you? Do you not like want to get to know you? Do you not want to? I don't know. I've always felt like I've been so unapologetic about who I am, and that bothers people a lot. And it's caused me trouble in life. It has. And I'm talking to the right person.
I know what you're talking about, girl. I know. I'm a card member there.
But I don't care, because to me, it's always been about, like, in high school, maybe I tried more, right? Where I wasn't so unapologetic. But I feel like that was part of that journey. And I never wanted to be like that again. I never wanted to be this docile, like, just copycat, like, follower. But I think it's also important for it, if you do realize, like, wait, I have the power to influence others. Let me do something powerful and mindful with that, because there's people that are aware of that do negative and bad things with it. And then we have the state affairs that we're in, right? Where, you know, we can have someone sitting in the presidency that's influenced now society, and we see what it's doing.
Yeah.
And that's with everything, absolutely everything. But for you personally, like, now you know, I'm an influencer, I have something to keep. But how do you make sure that during that you're so original, like, you stick to that originality and are unapologetic about it?
you learn it along the way. So when it's important at the time of influence, you're not wavering. So what I mean is, I knew at some point in time in my life, I would have to be a woman that would have to wear heels, slightly makeup, nice dresses, and have my hair did all the time. But leading up into that, I was focusing on purpose. I'm like, I had started out being an OR tech, and then I learned how to make a product line of toiletries. My son had some skin issues, and what the doctors were telling me wasn't working, and I didn't believe their report. And then you go to school to business, and you're like, what am I going to be doing with this business? I don't even want to be a business person, but now I have this business degree I'm never going to use. And then in all that time, you're working on your purpose. Maybe you don't account it to being purpose.
Yeah.
But the day your purpose, the work begins, because that's just ground. That's just credentialing up until then.
Right.
And then the day you get your chiropractic degree, you walk across the stage and they say, Dr. Lauren Penn, yay. That's when the work begins. Up until then, I had all these beauty friends, all my girlfriends, all my best friends had been beauty queens since high school.
Yeah.
And I was androgynous. Some days I'd be androgynous. I wore, and you heard me say,
yeah,
I wore boy shirts and I wore boy pants. And sometimes I wear boy shirts and pants and shoes. And I wasn't a lesbian. I didn't like girls. I just liked those clothes look better. That was when Human was out, I think. You remember Human?
Yeah.
They had, the boys were rocking the good sweaters. You know, I saw Malcolm Jamal Warner. He had like this Human sweater on. I could identify him because I had that same sweater. I was like, I got that sweater. It's at Human. They're no longer a company. But I just was like, hey, I like that. And so early on, I knew what I liked early on. You have to work through what other people think about your likes. And so in the world of media today, you put up a post and you're like, I didn't get any likes. If you're not well grounded within yourself and say, this is still powerful. What I'm saying is still powerful. What we're doing here is still powerful.
Yes.
And I don't care if I have likes or not. That's how it was when there was no like button.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Preach.
And I'm like, you know, I'm wearing these sweaters and I'm wearing these pants. My dad raised me. My parents were married, but my mom was going to school and working. And my dad was the parent that came home. And I spent a lot of time with my dad. So if you spend a lot of time with dudes, you're going to do dude stuff.
Yeah.
And so I was kind of androgynous. And then when I got to be an adult, some of my friends were like, oh, no, poor Lauren. Let's help her. But what they didn't know, and I didn't really share, is like, I come from fashionistas. My sisters are seamstresses. My grandmother was a seamstress. They made wedding dresses. You know, there was a feminine side.
Yeah.
But to me, in my own mind, I felt like there's a timing for it.
Exactly. And I mean, how old were you at this time?
I was probably in my late 20s because I did go through a period where they're like, you need to wear makeup, you need to wear dresses, boys won't like this, you need to look like this and you need to look like that, you need to be skinny and you need to be, there was a whole list of what needed to be and things that I had struggled with. I've always struggled with my weight. And, you know, boys aren't going to like chunky girls and boys aren't going to like really smart girls and boys aren't going to like that you wear these clothes. And they're, you know, I was getting a lot of input about what boys wouldn't like. And so I even focused more on my purpose. I was like, I got to go to school. Who cares about some boys?
Ugh.
I'm trying to make this bank. You know,
yes.
I'm trying to make this paper, right? Who cares? And then I got so fervent in it that I was like, the guy who will like me will like all of this.
Oh, yes.
And so I did that. My friends were like, oh, we'll come over. We'll help you pick your clothes out. And they come to my closet and they see I had like 100 pairs of shoes and I had all these dresses and all these suits and skirts. And they're like, what are you doing? I was like, when the moment and the opportunity hit that I need to wear this apparel mm-hmm. and be this person, it'll come effortlessly. And then when I was in school and we did clinic, you know, I wore slacks and boots, and one professor called me, he would say, "Here comes the queen."
Oh.
And when you hear that, queens are decked, mm-hmm. right? They're sharp. They're together. They got their crown in place. It's not tilted. They have clothes on. They smell good. Their face is pretty. And he would call me. He was like, "Here comes the queen," every time I came into the clinic. So purpose and timing was happening.
Mm-hmm.
When I moved here to Colorado Springs, real purpose, real time hit. Yeah. And I was like, okay, I moved here with one suitcase of clothing and two suitcases of books.
I love that. Yes.
And then I recreated myself.
I love it.
I was like, okay, I am going to wear the clothes that I want to wear. I'm going to wear the dresses that I'm going to wear. I'm going to wear the shoes that I'm going to wear. You know, my friends would say, "We really hate when you wear those hooker boots." Because I love fancy boots. I call those fancy boots. You know, some people call them working girl boots, but they add such character. You know, sometimes when I'm feeling myself, I put these on. And I didn't care that you didn't like them. Mm-hmm. And I would tell them, I said, if I was Beyonce, you would say, she's a fashionista.
Mm-hmm.
But because I'm not, you would say, oh, you got them hooker boots on.
Yep.
I didn't care. Because I represent me 100% in purpose and what God called me to do and who I am. And somebody's looking at me. I walk into meetings and people say, oh, I like your earrings. Oh, I like your hair. Oh, I like your dress. Oh, I like your shoes. People are looking, even whether they say something or they don't mm-hmm. say anything. And when you walk in purpose, people know you walk in purpose.
Yes.
When you've reached it, and you will defy all the things that people are saying to you. I just want to say one more thing.
Yeah.
I did go through some bouts of depression in motherhood.
Yeah.
At one point in time, I wanted my sister to take my son. I wanted to commit myself.
Oh, my goodness.
And she said, no. Yeah, you're going to work through that. Mm. We'll take him for the summer.
Yeah.
I was angry. I was like, I want to end my life. You know, I went through bouts of that because the pressure was so great.
I can feel that.
And when you're... And fortunately, when you are in purpose and you get closer, sometimes you have to battle that and overcome it.
Yes.
There were days I laid on the floor and I was crying out. I'm like, Jesus, you told me this is what you created me for. I went to the school. I did all the work. Where are the people? Where are the people I'm supposed to be healing and helping? Mm-hmm. And nobody was coming to my doorstep. And I was just like laying on the floor and I was crying and I was eating chicken. I was eating chips. And I was just like, it was so burdensome not to work in purpose.
Yeah. Oh, and That's the thing about powerful and, you know, inspirational women, is that it is those stories, right? I'm glad that you're comfortable enough to mention it, because although I want to celebrate you and for the woman that you're sitting in front of me, but that does not negate or take away from the things that you've gone through to lead you to this place of joy, ultimate fulfillment, right? Walking in purpose. It's beautiful to see, but for me, it's really important to acknowledge the whole person and acknowledge that sometimes those mental health breaks are necessary. Sometimes those things are necessary. And sometimes seeking professionals is necessary. So for you to have that personal experience, now I feel like that makes you even better of a practitioner, because you will be able to look at the whole person, because you yourself knows what being in those deep despairs is like. Me too. You know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Me too. And I think that sometimes life, there's just so much pressure. And I think that when you were not giving the right tools to succeed, whether your parents didn't teach you the right tools, or whether it was society, or whether it was a relationship that you chose to be in, whatever it is, whatever that was for you, you know, you personally, those of you listening at home, me personally, at the end of the day, we all have to go through these motions and we all have to figure it out along the way. And find a way to live our happiest lives, right? Because I feel like at the end of the day, whether you are an African-American woman, a Mexican immigrant, an Anglo, you know, person that's been here their whole life, whatever it is, wherever you come from, at the end of the day, we all are human beings who want to be happy, who want to be joyful, who want to lead the best lives we can lead, right? And I am so grateful that I ran into you and that, you know, I believe people mirror you, right?
Yeah,
and
thank you. Yes, they do.
And to be around so many successful women and to have the opportunity to sit and talk more and get under these layers, right? Like, what led you? I see the wonderful that you are now, but what led you here? So thank you so much for being with us today. If people want to come visit you at your office, learn more about chiropractic care, where could they do that at?
My office is 3608 Galley Road, Colorado Springs, Colorado, 80909. And I'm in the State Farm building with the WOW Center. My phone number is 214-799-0374.
Thank you so much, Dr. Lauren Penn, for being with us today. It was a true pleasure to talk to you. Guys, listening at your car, at home, wherever you are, at your home computer, thank you so much for joining us again for another episode. If you are a new listener, thank you for checking us out. If you're an existing listener, again, we would not be here without you. Thank you so much. If you want to keep up with the podcast, you can go to lifecopeapp.podomatic.com. If you want to keep up with me, nancyiperez.com. And I will catch you next week. See ya.